Good morning, everybody. If I can please ask you to take your seat so that we can get the session started this morning. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Armin Pichard, and I'm the director of the Mexico Project here at CSIS, and I'd like to welcome you all to CSIS this morning. CSIS is the Mexico Project is obviously always trying to stay ahead of the curve, and we obviously provide a venue not just for members of the administration in Mexico and also members of Congress, of the Mexican Congress, but I guess inadvertently, we've also created somewhat of a governor series. We are obviously cognizant of the vibrancy of Mexican federalism and the increasing importance of Mexican governors. And we've been, over the years, have been providing a venue for Mexican governors. And so we inadvertently have created a governor series, and I think it's fitting given the important role that they play in a democratic Mexico. This morning, it's our pleasure to have with us the governor of the state of Baja California. He is no stranger to CSIS. Those of you that have been coming to our events for years might remember that he was here with us back in 2002, shortly after having won the governorship. And I thought it was interesting that he would be here this week. As we know, in the last couple of weeks, the bilateral agenda has been very much on the front line, more so of the media front line, but also at the governmental level. This week we had here in Washington Secretary Derbez. There was also a delegation of both senators and deputies from Mexico here visiting their counterparts, I guess in anticipation of the U.S.-Mexico Interparliamentary Group. And I thought, you know, what it would be a great opportunity to provide a governor from a frontline state that has been dealing with many of the issues that are part of the broader bilateral agenda to hear his perspective and get someone, the perspective of someone who deals with these issues that impact him and his state and the citizens of his state directly. The governor is also, I want to note, accompanied by three members of his cabinet. To his right, Bernardo Martinez, who is the Secretary of Government. He had previously served as the Secretary of Public Safety. To his right, Enrique Villegas, who's the Secretary of the Environment. And to his right, Jose Gabriel Posadas, who's the Secretary of Education. Insofar as the governor, what can I say about the governor? You all have, I think, a copy of his bio. And there's no question that you will note that he is an elder statesman of the National Action Party, a party that he joined in 1968, 3 years after having graduated from the Tec de Monterrey. Nonetheless, I consider him to be actually one of the more progressive governors in Mexico. And he is someone who has spent some time in the state, and I know folks from his government and from the state as well. And his reputation in terms of his work ethic and his stamina is well known and not easily matched by even the much younger members of his cabinet. And I'm sure that they will attest to that as well. For us, it's a pleasure to have Governor Eugenio Elordi here with us this morning. And with further ado, Governor, welcome to CSIS.
Thank you very much. Good morning to all of you here present. I want to first extend my appreciation and thanks to Armand Prechard and CSIS for this invitation, for this opportunity. I'm glad to be back. I was here, as Armand says, when I was starting my governorship. And some time back, I was also here with our then National Party President Felipe Calderon when I was mayor of Mexicali from 1995-1998.
I remember because you were here at CSIS yes. as well as part of that Panista delegation.
Exactly.
Yes. And I had forgotten about that, actually.
And we came with the then governor of Jalisco, Alberto Cárdenas Jiménez.
Yes, it was basically the stars of the PAN at different levels, party, state, and municipal.
Well, I come from a state that has been a leader in many aspects of the development of Mexico. I would like to say that we are very proud to have been the first state in Mexico to have a governor from a party different than the one that had been in office for 60 to 70 years. 1989, I coordinated the state campaign for the election of Mr. Ernesto Rufo as the first PAN governor in Mexico. And I served as his state treasurer through 1995 when I became a candidate and won the mayorship of Mexicali, the first PAN mayor in Mexicali. My election was in 2001, and I have been in office a little bit more than 4 years. I would like also to appreciate your presence here and your interest in our comments. I would like to start out. I have a certain precise points that I would like to be able to express to you here. I would like to say Baja California is a land of opportunity, strategically located in the northwest part of Mexico along the border with California, with a population of 3.2 million people, an annual growth rate of 4.15, higher than the national average, which is 0.99, and 66% of the population under 34 years of age. Baja California is one of the youngest and most developed in Mexican states. It became a state in 1953. It is the best example of the mosaic of Mexico. We have a constant migration. We receive 42% of migration from south to north, and this state is a true representative of what is all of Mexico, but with a very high quality of people, because when people uproot themselves from where they have lived forever and they decide to go north, as in the 19th century or the first part of the 20th century here in the States, they used to say, go west, young man. Well, here they go northwest. And they come to Baja California. We receive about 100,000 to 110,000 new people every year. And we are very proud of this. This has made us a very strong and vibrant community. I would like just also express as to our government's evaluation by investment agencies. We have the highest grade given by Standard & Poor's, MXAA. And we are that because, obviously, we are one of the leading Mexican states in job creation. Last year, we contributed with 11% of new jobs created in Mexico. At the beginning of my administration back in 2001, we were in the 14th place in tax revenues. Today, we are in the 6th position. Our public debt last year was less than 5% of the annual budget. With more than 2,000 million U.S. dollars, in other words, $2 billion in private investment received last year, Baja California has a leadership and attraction of foreign direct investments in the whole country. Baja California has a third place in level of education in our country. The state government is strongly committed to invest in education. As a matter of fact, the state government invests more than 60% of its economic resources on the educational system. Baja California is a state that has many social, cultural, and historical ties with the U.S. As we talk about our border relationship, I think I would like to start by paraphrasing the great American poet Robert Frost and ask the question, do good fences make good neighbors? Like Frost, I struggle to understand what it is that many policymakers and some of the citizens in this great country are trying to wall in or wall out, given the profound and positive nature of the U.S.-Mexico relationship and the deep daily interrelationship that states like Baja California, California, and Arizona have with each other. Let me point out a few facts about this cross-border relationship. In 2005, more than $12 billion of goods were exported from the U.S. into my state using trucks. This is only one part of the $180 billion of all products that crossed the U.S.-Mexico border in trucks in 2005, let alone the economic flows of the cross-border tourists and shoppers in border communities. In 2004, nearly 86 million individuals from the U.S., Mexico, and other areas of the world crossed for tourism, to visit family, to go shopping, to access medical services, to go to school, and to do business just between my state alone and the U.S. Another 156 million legal border crossings occurred at other border crossings in Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. That means more than 240 million legal crossings from Mexico into the U.S. in 2004, almost entirely by good, law-abiding Mexican and U.S. citizens, most of whom live in the border regions. Keep in mind that for every northbound crossing, there is a corresponding southbound crossing of these individuals. So we are truly talking about nearly a half billion legal border crossings total each year along the U.S.-Mexico border. And just my state alone shares a broad range of infrastructure with California and Arizona. Major freeways that transport goods and people, electricity that lights our homes and businesses, digital fiber that transmit phone calls and the internet, and water from the Colorado River for people and farms on both sides of the border. These are important facts, are beginning to put many issues that we share, the economy, security, immigration, the environment, and the quality of life for our citizens in a more rational context. This is particularly true given the globalizing nature of our world, this flat world, as Thomas Friedman would call it. In fact, it is this evolution of global connections that requires us to rethink the U.S.-Mexico relationship and the opportunities that we have to become a more secure, integrated, and competitive region. Understanding the potential for this collaborative relationship requires us to know each other better and to respect the needs of each other more. We need to know how to communicate better and make good use of our talents in order to work together to find the best solutions and opportunities to benefit all the citizens of our region. This is both a rational and respectful way of finding solutions to the major issues in our communities and along the border. The so-called solution of building one, two, or three walls to further divide us will limit our potential. It will not result in bettering the opportunities and quality of life for those on either side of our border. Rather, solutions will be found in the hard work of education, in listening to each other, in making efforts to understand different opinions, and recognizing each other as teammates in community development, not as antagonist forces. Let us take the issue of migration, something that is painful and complex, and promises a shared benefit if we collaborate and solve it together. Yet, too often, public discourse, whether from television, the Minutemen, and others, distracts us from the reality of our border relationship and focuses anger and blame almost entirely on the border and Mexico. This despite the fact that according to the U.S. own Census Bureau statistics, there are over 6 million foreign-born non-U.S. citizens living in this country that are from Europe and Asia. Will the efforts of those speaking to build bigger walls address these migrants as well? Illegal migration is perhaps one of the most complex and delicate challenges that both our nations face. But this doesn't mean that we can't find a common ground of understanding for both countries. We talk on this issue with open mentality in order to find solutions with respect of the law and protection of the human rights of the illegal migrants. While it is true that the majority of non-naturalized migrants residing in this country are from Latin America and Mexico, it is also true that three-quarters of them came to this great country before the year 2000. If the U.S. does not create a rational visa worker program with Mexico, what will be the real impacts on millions of families, on children, on those dependent, on those that work hard in this country? Let's just think on what is going on in Europe in this very moment. On February 8th, the European Commission published a report in the experience of restrictions on labor migration from the Western European countries to citizens of the East European countries that joined the EU in May 2004. Far from stealing jobs from locals, most newcomers have taken jobs that locals don't want. Migrants from the group of 10 new countries have been an important element for creation of jobs, even for local workers. The evidence argues in favor of lifting all restrictions on labor migration from the new members of the European Union. Coming back to our region, building great walls between our two great countries neither increases security for our border regions, nor does it address larger threats to the communities of both our countries. Threats from abroad do not need to cross a border fence to cause harm to both sides of the border. Our shared border is not a threat. It is an opportunity for mutual development, for the trucks that move our products, for our people shopping and visiting family, and for tourists that come to the border states to specifically cross into Mexico. I would just like to say on the side that every day, thousands of people cross the Tijuana-San Diego border, the one that is most intensive along the border of both our countries. Close to 85% of these people work and have worked in the U.S. for all of their adult life. This happens every day. These thousands of people are not terrorists. They are not people that have been booked for any crime, but represent hardworking people working for their families. We must be able to access through more efficient, more expedite cross borders these people. I would like to also say that a recent study by the San Diego Association of Governments, SANDAG, gives us some important microeconomic data estimating that border waits between San Diego and Tijuana alone cause at least a $2 billion economic loss annually. Collaboration between both sides of the border means economic benefits for our border communities. New proposals for border crossing cards, border infrastructure, and border security technologies must take into consideration such microeconomic effects. Since combined, they make an important, much larger economy. We need to take advantage of technology in order to address some other challenges in a smart way. We recognize that the border region also represents opportunities for the organized crime. But we are looking at solutions to eradicate those society cancers that affect us with a positive attitude and without going around the bush. Both President Fox's administration and the government that I represent have done a tremendous effort in fighting drug dealers and criminals. And we are not fighting alone. We are working together with the U.S. authorities to the point in which we have been even recognized. We have been recognized by institutions such as the FBI, the San Diego Police Department, the Highway Patrol of California, etc., for our results. In such coordinated effort, we have arrested and prosecuted more than 400 criminals that belong in the organized crime of narcotics. And these people are in high security prisons in Mexico. This is a permanent effort of 24 hours a day because we need to take care of our next generations. Cooperation is also important in environmental issues. Due to our shared geography, our decisions and actions related to the environment affect citizens on both sides of the border. That is why it is critical to analyze in detail the effects of projects such as a planned construction and lining of the All-American Canal. You will see here the location of this canal. The red line is the border, and the proposed construction is the green line there. It's a 32-mile construction that has been authorized and funded by federal and California state monies. And this is what we will be talking about. This is supposed to be started to construct in about 4 months, more or less. Yes. I was saying here that the All-American Canal is an earthen canal built in the 1930s to deliver Colorado River water to users in California. Currently, the Bureau of Reclamation is coordinating efforts to concrete line 32 miles of this canal to annually recover 80 million cubic meters of water lost to seepage as the canal traverses an area of sandy soil just north of the Mexican border. The environmental consequences of the All-American Canal Lining Project have been assessed for the U.S. side of the border. However, the potential loss of 4,600 acres of wetlands on the Mexican side of the border that are currently fed by the seepage of the All-American Canal has not been properly addressed by the U.S. In other words, this study has not been done, and the impact on this environmental wetland has not been evaluated nor taken into consideration. This is a great omission in this effort to construct this canal. This Mexican wetland area in danger of being devastated by the All-American Canal Lining Project is inhabited by at least 100 species of birds, 12 of which are species considered threatened or endangered in the U.S. or Mexico. This particular wetland habitat in the northern reaches of the Mexicali Valley, has recently been identified as a conservation priority area within the Colorado River Delta region by respected environmental and academic organizations such as World Wildlife Fund, Environmental Defense, Sonoran Institute, and the University of Arizona. In a regional ecological setting without political boundaries, these wetlands are linked to other environmental critical areas such as the Salton Sea National Wildlife Refuge in California and the Colorado River Delta Biosphere Reserve in Mexico. In light of this, we hope that the U.S. government takes a harder look at the transboundary environmental problem that the All-American Canal Lining Project represents and consequently adopts a different stand on this issue so that we could work collaboratively to preserve our shared environment for future generations. Developing collaborative relationships starts with personal relationships, and I want to specifically mention our excellent personal and working relationship we have with Governor Schwarzenegger of California and his cabinet. Since summer 2005, when we met in the Border Governors Conference in Mexico, ever since we have had increased our encounters in both sides of the border and even created joint working groups in different issues such as economic development, education, culture, and sports, environment, border security, etc. Those encounters have generated the first results. On the border security issue, we have created a virtual information network in order to exchange information of stolen cars, lost people, as well as fugitive criminals on both sides of the border. Together, we are working on updating the database. On education, we have already created a sister school program on elementary and junior high schools, where children on both sides of the border can practice their language skills by taking advantage of information technology and computers. Also, we are increasing and deepening the linkage agreements of universities on areas of knowledge where we didn't have those programs before, such as biology, marine science, and nursing schools. On economic development, we have already started an active and ongoing discussion between our states on a project called Silicon Border, a multi-year effort to develop semiconductor manufacturing capabilities in Baja California at a major technology industrial park near Mexicali. While the semiconductor industry in the U.S. is still strong, having near-shore production capabilities can make sense both cost-wise as well as strategically given the concentration of such facilities in Asia. I would like to present a video which will take no more than 5 minutes of this presentation, everyone. Please.
Welcome to your tour of the world's most dynamic science park, Silicon Border, the science park of the Americas. Ancient science parks are more than 6,000 miles from the United States. The Europe's parks are more than 5,000 miles away. Silicon Border's 10,000-acre science park is located in Mexico, less than 1 mile from the U.S. border. It provides the world's most prominent design centers located in the U.S. a quick and secure access to their semiconductor, flat panel display, and other advanced technology manufacturing and fabrication facilities. located in Mexicali, the capital of Baja California, is 2 hours from San Diego, 3 hours from Phoenix, and 3 hours from LAX, one of the world's largest airports. Combined in Mexicali and the Imperial County of California, resides more than 1 million people with modern housing and shopping centers. This well-designed park accommodates the needs of the world's most sophisticated manufacturing processes and will provide education facilities that will train current and future employees. On this plenty of land dedicated for recreation, residential and commercial housing, shopping centers, and supporting industries. NFI are for modern power generation plants, an on-site state-of-the-art water and waste treatment facility, and advanced data and voice communication systems that provide a first-class infrastructure for tenants of Silicon Border Science Park. All this right on the U.S. and Mexican border. Major roads from the U.S. border and Mexicali feed into three park entrances. Bordered at the south of Silicon Border Science Park is Mexico's Highway 2, a four-lane modern highway that connects Mexicali and Tijuana. And just north of the park is U.S. Interstate 8 that connects San Diego to Phoenix. Plentiful power is available from nearby plants, which provides a combined 1,600 megawatts power. This keeps Silicon Border operating round the clock. The major canals from Mexicali's water system, fed by the Colorado River and just outside the park, will provide all the water necessary for years to come. Let's drop in and take a closer look at Silicon Border, the science park of the Americas. Contact us as soon as possible, and we'll be happy to answer any and all questions.
This is also a project that is being promoted also by Governor Schwarzenegger and myself because of the full impact it will have on both our regions. This is only one of the important assets that we have working together. I would like to also express to you the importance, as you well know, of NADBANK. As you know, is a binational bank. It's an effort of the most importance in our region. We have already loan proposals right now totaling $80 million currently pending before the NAD Bank. The NAD Bank has also provided $19 million in technical assistance grants to 93 communities and has trained 870 border utility professionals in its Utility Management Institute. NAD Bank's proposals projects have benefited approximately 8 million border residents. Potable water and a cleaner environment have delivered better health and well-being for affected populations, not to mention the positive impact that adequate infrastructure makes to the overall economic development of the region. There remains much work for NAD Bank to do in the U.S.-Mexico border for the two countries, so that is why it is very important that to continue having NAD Bank work for the communities of both sides of the border. We urgently need that the new board that has been integrated by the putting together the BEC, the Border Environmental Control Commission, and the NAD Bank board be put has put together a new board, which is already with the new members been nominated and are in place. I myself am the representative of the governors on the Mexican side of the border, and we also have other representatives on the U.S. side. But it is very, very important that this board be convened as soon as possible by the U.S. Treasury and the Mexican Secretaría de Hacienda, which preside over this board, so we can get more authorizations and availability of commitments being done to support important projects that are pending right now on both sides of the border. I think this is very, very important for us to be able to get this bank more dynamically going into our border regions. One more item, I would like to say that there is more to this than just helping one industry. UCSD-based San Diego Dialogue, a regional think tank that has been watching the California-Baja California border for over a decade, has recently issued a report called Borderless Innovation that takes the concept of Silicon Border further. By providing a regional cross-border example, the report outlines how we can leverage technology clusters, technology research, and technology manufacturing along the California-Baja California border in a way that provides a new way of competing globally for our states and create a new high-tech jobs for skilled workers on both sides of the border. Such new visions allow us to look at our border region and the opportunities that are truly present there in a whole different way. It allows us to envision borderless opportunities for the people of our country while still respecting the sovereignty between our nations. It allows us to take a new path away from the antagonist border policy options to ones that address the real issues facing the U.S. and Mexico in the 21st century. Baja California and Mexico must be part of creating solutions to our shared border challenges and our shared border future. Such a dream requires discipline, a specific work agenda, trust between our communities, and recognition that we are already part of the same North American family. I invite each of you to visit us in Baja California, to see this potential, and to join us in working toward a new vision of neighbors and how we can move beyond simple phases of good fences make good neighbors to good relationships benefit good neighbors. Before closing, I would like also to emphasize the San Diego, California, Baja California region is the most active on all of this border between our two countries. We have shown very clearly with good results and with safe results that we can do very much more thinking positively and not only going after ways of making impacts in the media and obviously working for our own personal political present and future. We must look at this much more institutionally. We are talking about people, and we must be able to concentrate on the benefits for a more dignified and a better quality of life for the people on both sides of the border. That is what we have achieved with the governor of California, and we are working, and he will be visiting us as we have visited him He has already visited us before. Now he will come again to our state in the next few weeks. And we are also working very, very intensively, and we will be able, I think, in a few months to come back to Washington with an important delegation from San Diego, businessmen, academia, people, including the president of UCSD, Marianne Fox, and also our own businessmen and academics, to show here in Washington what we can, what we have achieved together, and what else we can do together, without thinking about how we can close out each other from our reality. This is a reality, and we cannot go around it. We must face it and look at it constructively, because that's the only way we will be able to benefit from the efforts of both sides of our people. Thank you very much.
Governor, you mentioned that you had been here as part of that delegation. That delegation was headed by Felipe Calderon in 1997 while he was president of the PAN at that time. And you came in your capacity as mayor of Mexicali. And I remember, boy, his English is flawless. And he was obviously showcased by Calderon as it was a delegation of stars of the PAN, and there were other municipal presidents and state governors, including Alberto Cárdenas. And I remember because I thought, geez, you know, if you closed your eyes, you would have thought that maybe it was the mayor of Calexico and not the mayor of Mexicali. Nonetheless, I said at the outset that despite the fact that he's been a member of the PAN since 1968, he's very much a progressive thinker. I think it comes across in his remarks and as well as in the presentation that he made. I'd like to open up the floor for a Q&A session. There's a lot of meat that came out of his presentation touching on a wide range of issues, and I would welcome you all to ask questions across the board on any of the issues that you would like. Dennis, let me see if we have a microphone. Can you go back? And if you can please, Dennis, identify yourself as well. That'd be great.
By the way, Armand, just I went to visit Governor Schwarzenegger in April of 2004, yes, a few months after he had been in office. Mm-hmm. And we had a very interesting meeting there. We went out to his tent and smoked a cigar because he can't smoke in public buildings. But he built the tent, you know, and yes, it was very interesting to see the famous tent. We hit it off very well. And then the person that used to write for the San Diego Union, Neil Morgan, wrote a column, and he said, "We have been advised, or we know that Governor Lourdes went to visit Governor Schwartz in California, and people are saying." And this is with all due respect to my friend Arnold, that Governor Lourdes speaks better English than Arnold. So we always kid each other about that. And last time I was in his home with his wife, Maria, we had a very interesting luncheon. And we talked a lot about this, and she says, well, if you continue meeting with Arnold, I'm sure his accent will get much better.
Yes.
two plants are operating right now, as we mentioned here in the Silicon Border presentation, that are producing right now 1,600 megawatts. This is, I would say, at least 90% exported to California. One of them belongs to to Sempra Corporation, and the other one belongs to Shell. There's also a construction going on a little bit north of Ensenada, I would say about 15 to 18 miles north of Ensenada on the coast, on the Pacific coast, of an LNG gas storage facility, which there you go, more or less. That's where it is. This is a Sempra Shell project, and this is very, very important. We were very stringent and very, very restrictive as to the fulfillment of environmental issues and security issues, etc., taking not only the Mexican laws and regulations, but also the U.S. and other international aspects. And this will start going online by the end of next year. That is more or less the estimated time. There have been other efforts by other companies like Chevron, which has, in fact, an authorization for an off-land installation on the islands in front of Tijuana, the Coronado Islands. But this is on hold currently. There is also some efforts being done by the same Chevron to locate itself south of Ensenada, about 120 miles south of Ensenada, but nothing has been done about that. The only specific one is this Sempra Shell project, which, again, is being constructed and is in full swing to go into production. By the way, also, we continuously export. We have in the Valley of Mexicali the second largest geothermal field in the world. There are currently right now 2,500 megawatts being produced there from these from this field. On and off, energy is exported to California when such are required, and this has been going on for years. Also, we are working very much in the wind and solar energy. We are constructing the first project of housing, of economic housing in Mexico, in Mexicali. We will be constructing at the outset this year 500 and up to 3,000 economic houses fed by solar panels. We are looking right now for Mexican federal public funds and international public funds to be able to reduce the cost to the owner of the house of the solar panels, which unfortunately are still not competitively enough to be bought by these type of income, economic income. But we will be building this, these 500 houses this year in Mexicali, which is a completely ideal place for solar energy, and they will be able to produce up to 80% of the housing required in the house, because these will be bioclimatic housings with insulation on the roof and on the walls from a special Mexican federal energy companies, trust funds for these type of housings. In other words, they will have double windows, isolation on the roof and on the walls, and also these solar panels, which we hope will be available by June of this year.
Governor, if you allow me, I'm going to ask you a couple of political questions. As you know, there's a major political scandal going on in Mexico, due to the possibility of the governor of Puebla from the PRI, Mr. Marin, having intervened in a possible legal way to deal with a journalist that was criticizing, apparently, his friends. I'd like to know your opinion about this, whether you agree with those persons who are demanding his resignment or possible impeachment, juicio político. And secondly, as you know, there's recently a lot of concern in the U.S. about the border, about the violence in the border between the U.S. and Mexico. I'm wondering if you can give your sense as to the problem, how it is, what should the state government or the federal government should be doing that they're not doing to deal with that issue? And finally, what's your relationship with the PRI mayor of Tijuana?
Well, you've got yourself three very important questions there.
Well, Governor, Jose is known for multiple part questions, and so I'm always reluctant to give him the microphone because I know that his one question usually translates into multiple. But you're welcome. You're welcome.
Now, well, as you know, this scandal comes from taped conversations. I'm always, skeptical about these, sometimes the truthfulness about these conversations when they are taped. But it is very, very worrisome that this is happening. And what I would recommend very emphatically is that an investigation be done. As you know, taping phone conversations is illegal in Mexico, as I think it is also illegal in the U.S. That's why it should be investigated fully, well, except when somebody else does it here in the U.S., but I don't want to mention their names, but anyway, I'll be respectful in that part. But there should be an investigation done immediately because it is very, very worrisome of the way that the detention of this newspaper lady was done in December. It was done in a very quick and very extraordinarily and efficiency. In a very few days, they went to pick her up in Cancun and bring her back. So I think at least the governor of Puebla should open himself up to an investigation about these phone conversations. Obviously, if you take them as we have heard them, it is truthfully very, very, very repugnant the way that this conversation its content is heard. The way that both these people, the governor and this other businessman, talk about this newspaper lady is obviously very, very muy rechazable, muy repugnante, me explico, esta situación. Así es que yo diría, nomás para ser muy preciso en español, es que se haga una investigación inmediatamente, que el gobernador ponga la muestra, pidiendo que se haga la investigación, inclusive nombrando un investigador completamente objetivo y fuera de cualquier duda, ¿no? Para que quede claro, ¿no? It is very sad. The situation about safety and security. We have been doing, I think, a very substantial and positive effort with good results in the safety of our California and Baja California border. There has been no incidents that we can lament, for the exception of one in December when a Mexican was shot by Border Patrol agents. An investigation is supposedly to have been done, and we haven't heard the results about them by the San Diego Police and the Border Patrol about this. But safety is obviously of our utmost priority, and we have done a good coordinated effort of working with the FBI and the San Diego Police Department and the U.S. Customs and Border agents to obviously be always on the lookout. And we have detained many people during the last 3 or 4 years, especially, of Arabian ascendancy that have been trying to get into California. As you know, there is a large Iraqi population in San Diego County and Iranian population in this area. So there's also the temptation of going through Mexico and coming in from Central or South America with false passports. But fortunately, there has been no problem of terrorism on the border. Obviously, we have narco traffic and organized crime in our border. This, we face up to it with a great effort by President Fox. There has been many, many detentions being made in Baja California. We are the state that has sent more organized criminals to the highest security prison in Mexico, 162 in the last 3.5 years. But we need more bilateral efforts. It worries me because some of these high-level organized crime figures go back and forth along the border. Their families live in San Diego County. Their children go to San Diego schools. Why aren't they arrested in San Diego? How can they get across the U.S. border? Those questions, we must look for answers. But Governor Schwarzenegger and myself have declared that we have a safe border, that we do not need additional declarations of crises or in that area. There is much to be done, but we have a very good working relationship with U.S. authorities and state authorities on the San Diego area. Now, as our relationship with Governor Schwarzenegger, I think it's a very good relationship. The mayor of Tijuana, well, it's a respectful and harmonious institutional relationship. That's the way I would say it, and that's the way we have been keeping it. It is not in my way of doing things or thinking that we should be boxing each other. People want results. People want their necessities to be attended to. They want their requirements to be attended to. They don't want to see a boxing match between politicians. It's senseless. It's useless. It comes to nothing. All it does is have the media be very happy because they can sell more newspapers. That's the only results that we have when politicians fight in public. I don't fight in public. I don't fight in private. I do my job, and I work with the mayor of Tijuana and the other four mayors of the cities of Baja California. We put funds together, federal, city, and state funds. We'll go after the necessities of water, sewage, electricity, housing, et cetera, and we try to do our darndest to work together and everything. And we try always to stay away from the provocation that is constantly being made to us by the media to see how we feel about each other. I go out and have lunch with him maybe every couple of months, anything like that, and we talk about business, government business, period. So I have a respectful and harmonious institutional relationship.
Governor, thank you very much for your remarks this morning. My name is Emilio Bunge from Development Finance International. I'm also going to do a multi question, if you allow me, since someone took the lead earlier. My first question would be, beyond the issues that you mentioned, which are very critical and important, which is the one domestic thing that you want to accomplish in your remaining 18 months as a governor? The second one will be moving to the national arena. What do you expect happening in the next few months? And finally, since you make a great statesmanship comment about, you know, people are politicians should not be worrying about their personal future, but if you can share some of your thoughts about your future or your next steps.
Thank you. We have very clear objectives as to the working plan of this government. Some of these will continue, obviously. We very strictly believe that when a change of government happens, the blackboard should not be erased, should be left there, so the things that a people are requiring should continue. These governments are not personal governments. They don't belong to a person. They are an institution. You are a governor, but it is not your government to do as you wish and as you think. It is to do what you are being told if you listen to people, not hear them, but listen to them. That's the primary objective of a government that deems itself respectful of people who vote you in. That's the democratic way of doing things. But not wrapping yourself in an aura of divinity and thinking that you are the truth and that you that you receive this truth every day from somewhere and that you go on with it and do what you can and how you will it. No, that is a very stupid way of doing things. And you will face a wall sooner or later. So what do we want to do? We will continue to be able to provide at least 98-99% of water necessities in all of Baja California. We are very close to that. We want to have at least 96-97% of sewage in all the housings in Baja California. We want to be able to eliminate the backlog in economic housing. We have already done that in Ensenada and in Mexicali. And in Tecate, we are looking to finish what we have of backlog in Tijuana. We will be building in Tijuana this year 25,000 economic housings and 25,000 next year. With that, we will finish the backlog and have about 2,000 or 3,000 in reserve. Housing is very, very important. We want to be able to continually assure that anybody that wants to study preescolar. I don't know how you say it again. Preschool, primaria, and secundaria, be able to have a place in our state as they have right now. We want to continue having that. We want to continue to be able to increment more the amount of scholarships that we are given. We have given 190,000 in our term of government, 4 years. We will be giving this year close to 44,000 only this year. We don't want anybody for economic reasons to discontinue their studies. That's another of the objectives. Obviously, we want to be able to reduce insecurity. An anecdote, I had a luncheon on Tuesday in Mexico City with the Secretary of Economics, Sergio Garcia de Alba, and the principal directors of a very big Asian car manufacturing company, very big. And one of them came from New York, and another one came from New Jersey. That day, and I told them, tomorrow I'll be traveling to Washington. And then they told me, why don't you stay in Baja California? It's safer there. This is very important because we are fed, unfortunately, a very bad image. You know, Mexico is the only country that I know of whose newspapers have, no matter the size of the circulation, have a page to report crime, one page to report crime. I don't see this in the Washington Post or New York Times or anything like that. It's spread out in different incidents. But no, this one is in one page. I see Mexican media at night dedicating 15, 18, 20 minutes of prime time about crime. I don't see this in NBC, ABC, or in London, or in Paris, or in Tokyo, or in Seoul, etc., etc. We have an inclination, I don't know, because of maybe of our Aztec origins, to show about sacrifices and killings and blood. I don't know if it's something internally in our culture about this, you know. But we have to reduce insecurity, yes, definitely. Now, what else? Political situations.
Political future. It was the election. Right.
If Felipe Calderon does a very good campaign and has a very good communications with people and can tell them in their language so that they can understand what he wants to do, he will win. But he has to do a very good job. I think he started out doing his best. He is getting better, but he still has to get much better. To communicate in simple language what the people want to know. He is getting there each day better and better. So I think he should be able to win on July the 2nd. My own political future. Well, I've always said to be able to be in this job, you have always to know that your life doesn't depend upon a job like this or in public office. That you can do your own life without being in public office. This is very important because if you depend on being in public office to continue your life, you corrupt yourself immediately because you become so dependent. It's like a drug that you'll be able sometimes to do anything to continue in public office. No, I'm a businessman. I'll go back to my business. My children are taken care of. Maybe they don't want me there when I come back. But I'll be there to struggle with them. And if there's something in public office, I'll look at it, analyze it, and see if it's worth it. I spent since 1989 in public office one way or the other. It's been wonderful. I'm very, very happy. I'm very satisfied with myself. I decided to go into PON in 1968. My friend said it was a very stupid decision for a businessman to go into PON in 1968. My businesses have been through 16 audits from the Mexican federal government, courtesy of them. And I'm very, very satisfied that I am here, that I've achieved what I wanted in my state and in my city. And I feel very satisfied. And I have the biggest asset in my life, the biggest asset, my family and my home.
Mr. Governor, I'm Erica Warner with Associated Press. Two questions. You mentioned the shooting of Guillermo Martinez. I believe the Mexican government also announced an investigation by Mexican authorities of that, correct? Could you give me an update as to where that stands and what you found? And then also if you could comment on the border incursions that have been happening and are, you know, the Border Patrol has spoken out saying that they believe these are Mexican military that are crossing in some cases. I know the Mexican government disputes that, but what would you say on that? And then also if you could tell us what U.S. government officials you're meeting with while you're here and what has been the outcome of those meetings.
The investigation on the Mexican side was taken over by the Mexican Attorney General office. I don't know what they have found out. But we haven't heard anything also specifically from the San Diego Police Department, which is the responsible authority investigating this, and the Border Patrol. So right now, we are still waiting for both sides to give us information. As the state government, this was not an investigation that we could do because it was a international incident, which belongs to the area of the Mexican federal government. Concerning the military, that is completely unfounded. I think there's a sheriff in Texas that wants to be reelected and wants to have more security monies from the Homeland Security budget. It's completely unfounded, I can assure you that. I have obviously been at the Mexican's Defense Secretary's office, and it has been completely validated by them that these were not Mexican military. There is this impressive to me quick inclination to be able to make announcements that will splash on the media very big without being substantiated. Why didn't this sheriff say, I see people with military uniforms, why isn't there an investigation done on both sides or on the Mexican side, etc., and let's hear what they say? But he already confirmed from the very beginning that they were Mexican military. I mean, anybody can use Mexican military uniforms. What was very important at the same time is that on the U.S. side, U.S. military personnel was indicted for helping drug traffickers in the Arizona-Texas border also, more or less at the same time. And this was a judgment made in the U.S. against U.S. military personnel. But on the Mexican side, these were not military. Not that we are exempt. In another incident or another thing, they could be involved. Yes, we have had, unfortunately, people in very high rank of the Mexican military involved in drug trafficking. Yes, that is very, very sorrowful, very, very sad. But in this case, it was not. Well, we will be meeting with people from energy companies about our wind and solar energy programs. We will we will inaugurate in the Mexican Cultural Institute today at 7 o'clock an exposition of Baja California artists. You're all invited to be there again at the U.S. at the Mexican Cultural Institute. The director is. There you go. We will be meeting Japanese businessmen. Baja California has 44% of Japanese investment in Mexico. We are the state with the highest Japanese investment in Mexico. We have 60% of Korean investment in Mexico. But we will be meeting with the top Japanese companies and their representatives here in the U.S. today also. And we will be going to the Department of State. This All-American Canal, my dear friends, ladies and gentlemen, is a very, very important topic. It hits Mexican farmlands because it does not respect the transmission of underwater from the current All-American Canal, which has been receiving for the last 60 years. I want to emphasize this very much. The Department of the Interior and its secretary, Gail Norton, is shut themselves out from this topic and does not want to talk about it. This situation will blow in our faces if it is not attended to by the U.S. government. This is very, very worrisome to me. We are in a political election in Mexico. This is easy merchandise to be sold and handled by very antagonist forces of the U.S. in our border, in my state, in our capital city, where we saw it there. This must not be underestimated. When you hit farmers in Mexico against their water, it makes any farmer very bad, very, very mad. I understood why they were mad in Texas, because Mexico was not paying the water that was due to the U.S. from the Bravo, but Mexico made a very big effort and paid it, and is now in with no dues on that. But the U.S. government has not done its part on our side over there about this All-American Canal, whose intention is to recuperate water and sell it to San Diego County through the Imperial Irrigation District. So we will be seeing the Department of State about this, and also continue with the efforts. This has been presented by President Fox to President Bush on 23 March last year in Texas. But we are astonished as to why the Department of Interior does not look into this situation and set up a working group to solve the situation, because there are solutions to it in which both sides win. That's what we will be seeing also. And we hope to also meet with the Woodrow Wilson Institute through its director.
One last question. Or two last questions, because Pepe always leaves his question until the very end. Over here.
Asha Carreño.
Thanks, Governor. I have a question. I've been reading in the media that that drug cartels near Texas have been fighting over territory. And I was just wondering, what is your government doing to make sure that they don't come to Baja California to fight over territory?
Well, we have been doing every day a very, very strong action program with our federal government, with our army, and with our own state police, and also in coordination with federal U.S. agencies across the border. 54% of all arrests with organized crime and narcotics, 54% have been done in Baja California. We are, doing a job that has results, and in fact, we have been recognized by U.S. authorities for them, but we still have to do much more. I just laid a question here a few minutes ago where these big narcotics people cross the border, live in the U.S., and won't go back and forth. Why can't they be detained in the U.S.? I haven't heard of a large organized crime figure being detained in the U.S. for a very long time about narcotics. There is a perception that Mexico has to do all the arrests about narcotics and narco figures, and we are doing it. We have, in fact, extradited some people. We have sent people over here to be judged in the U.S. judicial system. But there must be more work done on the U.S. side, not only on the Mexican side. We must not be held exclusively responsible for this problem. It's a common situation. It's a worldwide problem. But at least on our border, it's a common situation. And we are facing it together on the California, Baja California region. And I'm very satisfied with the work that we have been doing with Governor Schwarzenegger in his office, where he has not pushed the panic button for media purposes like Governor Richardson or Governor Napolitano of Arizona, saying there is a crisis on the border and we need the army and everything. This is media impact. That's all it is. It's political media impact. You just have to do your work every day, get results, and that will help. We have also in our state created special attorneys, fiscal attorneys, no, not fiscal attorneys,
prosecutors
against organized crime. We have a state law against organized crime, one of the very, very few in Mexico on a state. We have, obviously, a state security secretary. And we're also doing very, very, there's a lot of work being done, very important, in prevention. Drug trafficking happens because there are consumers. California is the highest consumer state in the U.S. for drugs. There is a market for them. That's why there are drugs. We're in Baja California doing a very big effort, even from the start of children through their ages and adults, in prevention and also in rehabilitation in our state. We were recognized a few weeks ago by the governor's conference in the National Commission for Public Safety for our prevention programs and rehabilitation programs for drugs. This is also part of our effort. We are investing large amounts of money in sports and in culture. This year only will we be spending close to $45 million in sports only in our state, 14 times more than when we started. These are all part of avoiding drugs, preventing drugs.
Two very easy and fast questions. Number one, you mentioned that some of the drug leader figures in Mexico live across the border. I wonder if you could give us some names. Number two, I understand also that there has been attempts to present the San Diego-Tijuana region as a candidate to organize some Olympic Games. I wonder if there has been something there. And third, I wonder, what do you think is the role of the media at the border? Do you think that disappearing the crime page will disappear the crime? I mean, there have been Mexican reporters dying, murdered, because reporting on crime and drug trafficking. I wonder, what is your thought about that?
Well, in names, I don't give names. Why? Because giving out names, when they are very, very well known to U.S. authorities, I don't have to give them. They know them very well. This is a known fact. Number two, about the Olympics. Yes, we are working with a business community, certain businessmen in San Diego, to promote the realization of an Olympic in the San Diego, Baja California region. Yes, we are working on that, and we have been progressing. We have talked to the Mexican representative, Mr. Vasquez Raña, about the situation, myself and these San Diego businessmen, and we are continuing to work on that. We have some sites located on both sides that could be the sites for some of the Olympic venues also. Now, I want to give you an anecdote. A few weeks ago, I was given an award by the San Diego Greater Chamber of Commerce, a Regional Unity Award. At that award ceremony, I had a talk with Mayor Jerry Sanders of San Diego, just recently in office. And he was telling me that he is very worried because crime is now a very high, if not the most high priority in his area. I want to refer you, and all of you, to the Unified Crime Report that the FBI publishes every 6 months. This is an important report because it puts together all the crime figures or stats from the cities in the U.S. and the states in the U.S. According to the Unified Crime Report of the FBI, June 2005. There were 1,936 delitos, ¿cómo se dice? Crimes per 100,000 people in Baja California. Well, where do they get their figures from Baja California for this comparison? We get the figures from what is in our registers, and which is also transmitted to the National Security Commission in Mexico. And at the same time, it's validated by one of the fewest state citizen security commissions working in Mexico. This is a commission made up of Baja California citizens elected by the people through a legal mechanism without the governor doing any appointing. But this commission validates these figures. Just giving you this so you can understand that they are serious, honest figures. 1,936. In San Diego, as of June 2005, 2,250 crimes per 100,000 people. In Los Angeles, 3,018. Arizona, 3,321. And this is principally taken from Phoenix, for example. So now you have statistics that say that there is more crime in San Diego, in Los Angeles, in Phoenix, than in Baja California. Now, if you don't look at these stats, Sr. Carreño, you would say, if I ask you, is San Diego safe? Everybody would say, well, of course, we haven't heard anything bad about San Diego. It seems to be a safe place. But you know they're killing people in the commercial centers in San Diego. They're stealing cars. They're stealing things from women that leave the stores towards their car. There is gangland fighting in the southern part of San Diego. You know that about 68 policemen from the Rampart section of the L.A. Police Department were indicted for murder, for trafficking, etc., etc., 2 years ago. Now, what happens in my state? The front page of newspapers present crime. People laying down on the streets with sheets covering them, blood on the side, front page. If you ask any of you here, would you say, Tijuana is safe? You would probably say, I think there's a problem of safety. Where does this happen, Mr. Carreño? Because we don't take care of our cities through the media. That's the important thing. Jerry Sanders tells me we have a high priority in crime right now. And Jerry Knight, the CEO for the Greater San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, says we take care of our city. These things that happen in our city has no sense being put on the front page because that will not solve safety in our region. What will solve safety in our region is actions and programs, but not disqualifying our city by presenting these situations, which are real. But again, is it something worth the proposal of reducing security to present these, to impact people? Will people impacted help to reduce insecurity? And then they say, will be leaving Baja California and living in San Diego. And I tell them, look at the statistics. And when I give these statistics, they never print them. Because you know what? It's something that they don't want to see. That's the problem. We are not taking care of our communities by printing this page. Why do we have this exclusivity in our country about printing this page, this crime page? Does it solve anything? Does it help anything? Why isn't that done all over the world? If it's something good, why doesn't any other newspaper do it outside of our Mexico? I ask myself that question. And some media people tell me, we are not here, but only to sell. We are here to sell information.
Governor, thank you very much. But I'd like to ask just as a call from, what is the percentage of solved crimes in Mexico, including the, what is the difference of definition between crime in the U.S. and crime in Mexico? Violent crime.
In Baja California, which I can speak of, the percentage of solved crimes in Baja California is 83%. 83%. I don't know the national figure. I worry about my own state.
So you think that perhaps by eliminating investigative reporting on, for example, the cartels, would do a good to the country?
No.
Because the reason why murder in Mexico is because...
I'm not mentioning reduced... eliminating
the investigation between bloody crimes and...
Okay,
and
I'm going to interfere for a second. I said one last question, okay?
I'll let you...
No, just a second. We're going to conclude the event. You can always address him later. This, you have to understand, CSIS is a venue for the Washington policy community as well as the media, but it's not an event that is exclusively addressed for the media, and you have to respect me and the other guests here. As to regards to the media, I respect Carreño, and I respect my friend Zamorano from Pimex. But let's, I think, also be honest that some of the incidents that have transpired against Mexican journalists has been as a result not just of their covering of incidents of narco traffic, but there's been some cases where there's been some level of complicity. So let's try to be honest and recognize that fact. Okay? It's a fact. That's fine. Anyway, well, I would like for you to join me in thanking the governor. It's unfortunate that this presentation took the turn for what I thought is an unfortunate turn for the worse, because I think there's a lot of good information out there, and I don't want it to be balanced, look both at the pros and the cons of some of the challenges facing the state. But, Governor, you're welcome here at CSIS. And thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Governor.